adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown. Take pride in bringing you the first of a new series, the program drawn from the celebrated books by Carter Brown, which have sold more than 10 million copies and continue to sell at the rate of over a million copies a year. Each week you'll hear a complete story dramatized in the smooth, modern style, which has been responsible for Carter Brown's enormous popularity, both in Australia and abroad. And here, to introduce the Carter Brown Mystery Theater, is Carter Brown himself.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? I'm very pleased indeed, and I must admit flattered, too, to have been asked to present my stories to you.
Mr. Brown, I know you've led a pretty adventurous life yourself. You've traveled around the world as a salesman, publicity writer, film technician, and now, finally, as a best-selling author. And quite a number of people seem to think that the heroes in your stories are really yourself. Now, is that true?
No, it's not. And if I sound very definite about that, it's because my wife's listening to me, and I don't think she'd like the idea of my running into so many gorgeous blondes, brunettes, and redheads as the gentlemen in my books do.
No, nor, I suppose, into as much trouble as they do.
No, I don't think she'd like that either, I hope.
Yes, your heroes certainly do wind up in strife, don't they? Like Johnny Lane, for instance. Johnny's a newspaper columnist, and they've got a premium on problems. Not that they all run into the same kind of bother as Johnny. They wouldn't want to. Well, he's a cocky character with an eye for a beautiful babe and printer's ink instead of blood. But suppose you find out for yourselves. Here's Johnny Lane to tell the story which we've titled Call for a Columnist.
I was feeling pretty pleased with myself and hence with the world. I had the best table in Jules' night spot, courtesy of Monsieur Jules himself, and on the table was my favorite drink and my favorite reading matter, a copy of the news, open at the best part of the paper, my own column, Dynamite with Johnny Lane, syndicated in 68 newspapers throughout the United States with an estimated 4 million readers. Yes, as far as I was concerned, life was a great big rosy bubble with Johnny Lane riding on top of it. Then the bubble burst.
Excuse me, Monsieur Lane.
Yes, Jules, my friend, what is it?
There are two gentlemen to see you, monsieur, in my private office.
Jules, I never see anyone in your private office, you know that.
These gentlemen are from the police.
Oh, well, that makes a difference.
Monsieur Lane, I would not like any trouble.
Don't worry, I'll handle them. You stick with your customers.
Thank you, monsieur.
Well, well. I feel honored, gentlemen. Chief of Police O'Byrne and Captain Stanger in person. And together. Whose piggy bank has been robbed?
Cut the clowning, Lane. This is serious.
Oh, you intrigue me, Captain. Tell me more.
We wanted to talk about your column, Johnny.
A subject I am always happy to discuss, Chief.
It's about the item concerning Albert Ferraro. I've got a copy here.
Uh-huh.
You said, mobster happy Albert Ferraro won't get around much anymore. Not since he had unexpected visitors at 2 a.m. this morning. Rumor had it that Albert was going to sing to Senator Rowland's committee investigating vice and allied rackets in our fair city. This morbid columnist is betting that Albert sang his swan song in the small hours to an unsympathetic audience, with a hay and a hoe and no flowers by request. Who is the Mr. Big who's worried by Senator Rowland's questions? Keep reading this column, folks, and I'll let you know just as soon as I find out.
Not bad, Chief. You really haven't got the style for it. Or the voice.
This paper was out on the streets at 3 a.m., just 1 hour after Ferraro had his unexpected visitors. It takes more than an hour to print your paper, Johnny. And that means you put that item in before it happened.
Just a hunch, Chief. If I'd been proved wrong, I'd have had to wriggle out of it in tomorrow's column.
But you haven't been proved wrong, Johnny. As soon as we read your item, we called on Albert. Guess what? He was at home, with a nylon stocking wound round his throat. Tight.
Well, that's what you get for sticking your neck out.
Maybe you should see things the way we do, Johnny. We have to take Senator Rowland's investigation seriously. The more he uncovers on the vice activities in this city, the worse it looks for the police.
Sure, we bust up a lot of
small stuff, but the big stuff still goes on, and we can't get a lead.
So, when we read our paper, we find that the one lead which might really have opened things up for us was never given to us, until it was too late.
Oh, come, gentlemen, let's be fair. You get the same opportunities as I have for getting information. Better. If I happen to have outsmarted you on this one, it's no use feeling sore about it, is it? You just have to do better next time.
Chief, let me bust him on the jaw, just once.
It wouldn't look good to his 4 million readers. Johnny, all I want to know is where you got your information from.
Sorry, Chief, that's confidential. Now, look, I've got more than 100 people in this city who hand me information. Two things that I'm always sure of. Their money and my discretion. What happens if I tell you where the whisper about Albert came from? Word goes around that Lane can't be trusted. My column gets shot to heck.
Okay, Johnny. I guess we'll just have to plug on with our own plotting methods. I see you're going to let us know pretty soon who the Mr. Big is. We'll be really interested in that. You got any life insurance, Johnny?
Life insurance? What?
I was just hoping you got plenty, because I don't think you'll find anybody willing to give you more. You're a bad risk now.
I'm afraid I don't quite follow.
If we're interested in your story about Ferraro, how much more interested do you think Mr. Big is going to be? And when he gets around to asking you about it, I don't think he'll take that confidential routine as an answer. Let's go, Captain. So long, Johnny. Or should it be goodbye?
I'm not a nervous character, but as O'Byrne and Stanger walked out, I suddenly found myself dabbing my forehead with a handkerchief. There ought to be a law against policemen going around frightening people. Well, I decided I could use a drink back at my table. Didn't waste time apologizing to the people I knocked over to get there.
Mr. Lane, everything was all right?
Yeah, sure, Jules. Don't give it another thought.
Oh, I am grateful. Mr. Lane, there is someone who would like to say hello to you.
I never say hello to anyone. That's one of my principles.
Hello, Mr. Lane.
I turned to look at her, a startlingly beautiful face framed by close-cropped black hair and a set of curves that had sent a racing car driver dizzy. My principles shot through the ceiling.
Well, hello. This is the feminine half of the new act I am presenting. The Adagio dancers, Simon and Simone. You saw them last night, Mr. Lane.
Oh, yeah.
Did you like it, Mr. Lane?
You bet. Especially the end of it, where he throws you across the floor and you spin out of sight on your, where you spin out of sight.
Effective, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a good way to test the floor for splinters. But will you join me?
I'd love to.
You will excuse me, aren't you?
I hope your husband isn't going to take exception to your having a drink with me.
My husband? Oh, Simon, he is not my husband.
Oh, that makes it worse.
He is just my partner.
That makes it better.
I want to say how much I admire you, Mr. Lane, for what you're doing now.
You mean holding your hand?
Of course not. I mean in exposing the criminal element in the town, helping Senator Roder.
Oh, that's nothing. I'll pour you a drink.
I think you are a very brave man. I imagine you carry your life in your hands this very minute.
Oh, what makes you say that?
It's obvious. I'm sure that most of the underworld must get mad at the mere mention of your name. Their only logical solution to stop you printing these revelations is to remove you, isn't it?
No!
I can't see any other alternative.
Well, I guess you can't.
Still, you must know all this, Johnny. I shouldn't be worrying you with it. But I just wanted you to know how much I admire your courage in doing it. Oh, I'll have to go. We're on in 15 minutes. Maybe we could continue this conversation after my act is over.
Well, I've got to get home and get out my column. Can I take a rain check for some other night?
Any night, Johnny. Say, tomorrow?
My customary cab was waiting outside the night spot. Part of the service for a celebrity. I got in, gave the driver the address of my penthouse. I made about 2 blocks when I noticed he was studying my face in the rear vision mirror. What's the matter, driver? Have I got smallpox?
You're Johnny Lane, aren't you? Newspaper guy.
Yeah, that's right. Want my autograph?
No, I never get past the funny. But my wife reads your column.
Oh, she like it?
Well, I don't know whether she likes it. She don't ever say, but remember they published your photo a couple of months ago?
Oh, I believe they did. I asked them not to, but they told me they were sick and tired of the letters demanding to know was I as handsome as they imagined me to be.
Yeah, well, the old lady sees it, and she don't believe it.
It happened to be a good likeness, that's all.
That's what I'm going to tell her when I get home. She said she didn't believe any guy could look as dumb as that. Here we are.
How much do I owe you?
I got 98 cents on the clock, Mr. Lane.
Here's a dollar. You can keep the change.
Hey, what do I do with the 2 cents?
Endow an orphanage.
I rode the elevator to the top floor and reached my keys. I moved down the passageway to the penthouse door. I could hear the phone ringing inside, and I opened the door in a hurry. Hello?
Is that Johnny Lane?
Yeah, another. Who's that?
I'm so glad you published that item I gave you about Albert.
Yeah, well, it's got me into a lot of trouble with the police. They want to know how I knew what was going to happen before it happened.
Did you tell them?
Well, how could I? I don't know myself. All I know is you keep calling me up. You won't tell me who you are. All you do is give me tips to the column.
Think how it impresses your 4 million readers.
I have no ambition to spend a few years behind bars for the sake of impressing my readers.
Don't kid me, Johnny Lane. You'd dive off the Statue of Liberty in the Hudson wearing a bikini if you thought it'd get you another 10,000 circulation.
I'll let that pass.
I've got another news item for you if you're interested.
I'm interested.
There's a honky-tonk down on Sloan Street called the Blue Diamond, run by Lou Prager. If the good Senator Rowland would like to know, that's the distribution center for goofballs. So long, Johnny.
Hey, wait a minute. It's time you tell me who you are. How can I tell the police my information comes from an anonymous phone call? They just assume believe people go to see Marilyn Monroe because they like to hear her sing. What the... Hey, hang on to yourself, kid. It's under the door. Okay, I'm coming.
Just move back quietly, Mr. Lane, and we'll close the door.
Hey, that's a gun!
Your eyesight's 20/20, Mr. Lane. So get inside where we'll be nice and private.
Carter Brown Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense. Based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
You'd think people would have a little more respect for my position, not to say my feelings. After all, 4 million readers turn regularly every day to my column, to the headline, Dynamite with Johnny Lane. I'm somebody in this town. And what happens? Just because I print a hint in my column about a mobster's imminent demise, a hint thrown my way by an anonymous female phone call, I'm suddenly everybody's favorite focus of attention. The wrong kind of attention. Like the guy at my penthouse door shoving a gun into my stomach and telling me to get inside.
That's bitter, Mr. Lane. Now we can get down to business.
Now, look, I got no business with anyone like you. I'm just a newspaper columnist.
You printed that item about Albert Ferraro's murder, didn't you? Before it happened.
Yeah, but look, O'Byrne, the chief of police and the captain of his stanger, they wanted to know about it, too. But I didn't tell them anything, so you and your friends don't need to be nervous.
No, but you do. You're going to need protection, friend. I just proved it.
What?
You're a sitting duck, Mr. Lane. I could have blown your head off, and who was to stop me?
Who are you?
My card.
What? Leon Art's private detective missing persons trace bodyguard supply.
And that's just what you need, a bodyguard. Now, I can supply one. Our rates are $35 a day in expenses. That's not too much to save your life, is it, Mr. Lane?
No, I guess not, but...
No buts, Mr. Lane. Now, suppose I'd been one of these criminals you've been ridiculing in your column. You would have been dead by now.
Okay, you sold me.
Oh, fine, now. got one of our standard agreements here. If you'll sign it, I'll spend the night on your sofa, and in the morning I'll assign a regular bodyguard to you.
Who'll that be?
Oh, Tony Spencer, my best operative.
Okay. I don't know that I approve of your methods, Mr. Arch, but you got a deal. The comforting reassurance of the private eye's presence on the sofa in the other room gave me 8 hours solid slumber. But when I yawned the morning in, I nearly dislocated my jaw halfway through the yawn. The sofa was empty. Then I remembered. Arch must have gone out to arrange about Tony Spencer, my permanent bodyguard. And Police Chief O'Byrne's threats of the night before disappeared in the thought of constant protection from some nice, hefty ex-heavyweight. The percolator was bubbling and soft music from the radio was cheering the morning when the buzzer went. I bounded to greet my bodyguard.
Mr. Lane?
Sure. What can I do for you?
It's what I can do for you, Mr. Lane. I presume it's all right for me to come in. You have a nice place here, Mr. Lane. I think I'm going to like it.
You do?
I certainly do.
Well, that's fine, just fine. Beautiful blonde is just what I need in my life. Honey, come to Papa.
Hey! Hey, what hit me? A blockbuster?
I don't know why it is, but I have this trouble with every assignment.
Huh?
It's always the same. Men just can't get used to the idea of a female bodyguard.
You mean you're Tony Spencer?
That's right. And there's no need to look so surprised. There are female lawyers, doctors, dentists. Why not a female private detective?
But I can't go around with a lady bodyguard. I'm the laughing stock of the town. Now, I'm sorry, but you'd better go back to the agency. I'll pay for the day's hire, of course.
It'll cost you more than that. Didn't you read the penalty clause in the agreement?
I didn't read it. I just signed it.
Your agreement calls for a bodyguard for a minimum of 2 weeks. If you break the contract, the full premium is due immediately, plus compensation of $500.
That's blackmail.
That's business. Well, do I stay?
Who am I to argue with a beautiful girl? Especially when she's a jiu-jitsu expert.
Well, there's certainly one thing about working for you, Mr. Lane. A girl gets taken to the best places.
Oh, I'm here every night. Jule and I have an understanding. You know, I can't get over it.
What?
That dress.
Why is something showing?
Nothing that shouldn't be.
Johnny! Oh, you remembered. Oh, I didn't realize you had company.
Simone, sit down. This is Tony Spencer. This is Simone. She's half the Adagio team in the floor show. Simon and Simone.
Yes, I've heard about you. Especially about that intriguing finish to your act where you spin off the stage. Tell me, do you have to take your meals off the mantelpiece afterwards?
You must wait and see. Unfortunately, not tonight. Simon is ill, so we do not perform tonight.
What a pity. I'm just dying from curiosity.
Just so long as it's from something.
Mr. Lane, will you excuse me? I want a part of my nose. It's obviously not wanted here.
I admire your taste, Johnny. I must even confess to a minute touch of jealousy.
Jealousy? Oh, you flatter me, Simone.
I thought we had a mutual interest in each other. I was even hoping that as I had a night off tonight...
Oh, you don't have to worry about Tony. She's only a buddy.
Well, that isn't exactly a nice way to describe a girl.
I mean, she's only a friend. Simone, how about we fade quietly away while the opportunity's ripe, huh?
Indeed, your girlfriend.
Oh, she won't care. Come on, let's get while the getting's good.
All right, Johnny. And I know just the place.
Yeah? Where?
My apartment.
This is what you call really living. Beautiful girl, cozy apartment.
Oh, it's just a place to sleep. You know, you fascinate me, Johnny.
I do?
Mm-hmm. What does it feel like to be a power in the land?
to know that what you write today is read by 4 million people the following day.
Oh, feels just like any other job where you can make $100,000 a year.
Johnny, tell me about Mr. Beak who runs the vice rackets. I'm dying to know who he really is.
Well, so am I, honey.
Oh, come on, Johnny. Don't be a sourpuss. I won't breathe a word to anybody.
I'm sorry, honey. I wish I could tell you, but I can't.
Oh, Johnny. Blast. I don't know who this is, but I don't want them, whoever they are.
She moved out into the hall, and I got a lot of pleasure out of following that swing and sway walk. In a couple of minutes, she came back with two men behind her. The first one had a face like a horse in a suit with more padding than the average woman's magazine serial. The second had white hair and blue eyes covered by black, heavy-rimmed spectacles.
Johnny!
Well, company. Introduce me to your friends, Simone.
I can't. I don't know them.
What do they want?
I don't know.
Why don't you ask them?
Because the one with the glasses has a gun in my back, and he told me to shut up if I wanted to stay alive.
Oh.
Okay, that's enough. We're in a hurry. Come on, let's go.
Johnny, do something.
Well, it's a shame to break up a pleasant evening. These gentlemen are so anxious for your company, Simone.
We don't want a dame. We want you, Buster.
Me?
Yeah. So grab your hat and get moving.
I had to put up a struggle, but I was outnumbered. There were four of them. Two men and two guns. I was bundled out of the apartment into a car. About an hour later, after more twists and turns than a roller coaster with hiccups, we pulled up outside a dilapidated shack off the main highway. Two hoods shoved me inside. By a roaring log fire stood a ravishing redhead. When she saw me, she smiled. When I saw her, I blinked and did a double take.
Hello, Johnny.
Hey, weren't you a blonde last time I saw you?
Could be. I really forget.
Oh, the world suddenly gets to be a small place. I remember. You're a piece of dirt I wouldn't use in my column.
You use such nice language, Johnny.
Senator Rowland's girlfriend.
Ex. That's important, Johnny. Ex-girlfriend.
Thelma, as I live and breathe.
Which you will for a long time, I hope. Oh, aren't you going to say thank you? I gave you some good stuff for your column, didn't I?
The best. Why all the mystery? The anonymous phone calls and this kidnapping. If you'd called me, I'd have come.
Oh, we'd have preferred it this way, Johnny. Maybe we got a peculiar sense of humor.
Okay, so I'm laughing and now the gag's over. Can I go home now?
Sorry, Johnny, the gag isn't over. Not yet. You're staying right here for 2 or 3 days.
What for?
Well, we thought the peace and quiet would give you a chance to write your column without any interruption.
Now, don't be crazy. How can I write my column here? I can't get in touch with any of my contacts. I'd be isolated.
Well, you don't have to worry about that, Johnny. You see, we've written your column for you.
What?
That's right. To cover two issues and asking a few interesting questions, like, do people know that the learned Senator Rowland made his money out of slot machines in the first place? Setting up the wires for bookies in the second place, and dope from call girl rackets in the third place. Also, that Albert Ferraro was bumped up not because he was going to sing to the Senator's investigation committee, but because he was trying a double cross. And finally, asking whose influence got Police Chief O'Byrne his job.
Holy cow.
And all you've got to do is copy the stuff out in your style and handwriting, so we can deliver it to the news.
If you think I'm sending that sort of stuff to my paper, you're crazy.
If you think you're not, you're as good as dead.
Yeah, but insinuations like that about Roland and O'Byrne, I'll be shot.
You'll be shot either way. So what are you got to lose?
I'm always a guy who'll see reason, especially when there's a gun pointing at my midriff. Thelma stood over me while I batted out the column on the ramshackle typewriter. I presume she just wanted to check on my spelling. And she and the white-haired guy, they called him the professor, grabbed the car and headed for town, leaving me in the tender care of the Horseface character, whom I logically enough called Horseface.
Now you just keep in line, pal, and you and me'll get along but fine.
Now look, Horseface. look, fella, what's the sense in keeping me here? I did what Thelma wanted, didn't I? You might as well let me go now, huh?
Oh, no. We ain't that dumb. First thing you do when you get back to town is cancel them columns. Oh, no, pal. You stay right here. Hey, what's that?
Sounds like visitors at the front door.
I ain't expecting nobody. I'll go see. And you keep your trap shut, pal.
What? Hey, who is it? Hey, Horseface.
Wow, that's a fine thing to call a girl.
Tony!
You rat, running out on me like that. Don't be surprised if Mr. Arch invokes Clause 14 of the contract.
Clause 14?
Non-cooperation. Non-cooperation of a client doubles the fees payable to the agent.
Look, never mind the fees. How did you get here?
I'm a private detective, remember?
Yeah, but Horseface, the guy who opened the door.
It came off and hit him. Now, come on, we're getting out of here. Mr. Arch is outside in the car. We've got everything arranged.
Boy, you sure work fast.
We've got a hideout all arranged where you can lie low for a couple of days.
Lie low? What are you talking about? I got to get back to town and stop him publishing my column.
I don't know anything about your column. I've got my orders for Mr. Arch. You've got a hideout for a few days.
I am doing nothing of the sort. I am not moving from here except to go back to town.
Oh, well, if you feel like that. Sorry, Mr. Lane. But orders are orders.
Arthur Brown, Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
Yeah, people have often told me how much they envied me. Well, I can't blame them. Who wouldn't envy a guy who writes a column like Dynamite with Johnny Lane, which has a 4 million readership? But right now, even I wouldn't envy me. By the time Senator Rowland's ex-girlfriend Thelma and her two hoodlums had finished with me, I was really in trouble. I knew what was going to happen when the two editions of my column that Thelma had forced me to write hit the streets. When Senator Rowland, in the full pride of his position at the head of the Vice Probe Committee, read those allegations against him and Chief of Police O'Byrne, I could guess who was going to be on the burning end. Me. And to add injury to libel, Tony Spencer, my bodyguard, the girl with the captivating curves and the concrete constitution, had first rescued me and then slugged me over the skull.
Johnny, you're awake.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
Oh, fine, just fine. How long did I sleep? Hey, you hit me.
I'm sorry, Johnny. Honest, I am. But it was the only way to get you here.
Where? Where am I?
This is the hideout that Mr. Arch picked out for you. You're safe here.
Safe? Nothing. I got no time to be safe. I remember now. I got to get to the paper. I got to stop him printing those columns.
I'm afraid it's too late for that, Johnny.
What do you mean? The paper won't go to bed for a couple of hours
it's
yet.
It's already been to bed, Johnny. And so have you. For 3 days.
3 days?
Well, don't scream like that, Johnny. You'll burst from your drum.
I'll just burst. I can't have been out for 3 days, just from a tap on the head.
Of course not. I dosed you with a sleeping draught every time you woke up.
And those columns, they've been published?
Yes, Johnny. I don't know what you're so worried about. I think you're wonderful to have the courage to say what you did about the senator and the chief of police. They gave it a special treatment both days. Ran it right on the front page with a heavy black border around it.
My obituary notice. Hey, but that only covers 2 days. How about today's issue? What did they run today?
A statement saying you hadn't had time to write your usual column, but that they confidently awaited the proof you're sure to bring in. Oh, they were awfully nice, Johnny. They said that in spite of intimidation, writs, and threats, they stood solidly behind you.
Intimidation, writs, and threats? Holy cow, I'm a dead duck. Look, I've got to get back to town before they serve me up to the cops with cranberry sauce.
Well, there's no reason why you can't go now. Mr. Arts and I were only concerned with laying you low for a couple of days.
You did that all right. No guy could have been laid lower.
I've got the car. I'll drive you back.
No, thanks. I'll drive myself back. As of now, your services are no longer required.
But, Johnny, you'll need a bodyguard more than ever now.
The kind of bodyguard that knocks me out cold for 3 days I can get out of a bottle. And it won't cost me $35 a day in expenses. Goodbye, Miss Spencer.
Well, Lane, I'm so happy to see you. We have missed you.
You're going to miss me a lot more in the future, Jewel. For a number of years, I should imagine.
You are going away, Mr. Lane?
Sing Sing, Alcatraz. State hasn't made up its mind yet. But it will, Jewel. It will.
You would like a bottle of your usual?
Two.
With pleasure. I will fetch it myself.
Johnny! Oh, it's good to see you, Johnny.
Oh, it's great to see you, Simone. A little luscious feminine company is just what I need right now.
I was so worried about you, Johnny. Those terrible men. Did they hurt you?
They killed me.
Killed you? You are joking, no?
Your drink, Miss Celine. You know, when you did not come for 4 nights, I was worried. I wondered perhaps if I had inadvertently insulted you.
Jules, as long as you supply drinks like this, you can't insult me.
Oh, I am proud to serve you, Monsieur Lane. The man who has the courage to print what you have printed is a man to be admired.
Oh, don't drag that up. There's a $2 million damage suit against me and the paper, and my editor's going quietly crazy.
What is the latest development? Perhaps you would give us the inside story, monsieur. Tell us how your fight against vice is progressing.
Vice has won a technical knockout. It's only a matter of the referee counting me out. He must be somewhere around 8 already.
Truly, Johnny, it is as bad as that.
Worse. Much worse.
Jules, would you mind leaving us alone for a little while?
No, of course not. I just remembered. Someone ordered a duck and I have to go out and shoot one.
Poor Johnny. You are in low spirits, eh?
I expect to be in very high spirits by the time I finish this bottle.
Johnny, if you feel low, why not go to my place? You can tell me all about it and it might help you, eh?
Yeah, I guess it might.
Johnny, here comes trouble, I think. When you're through, come to my apartment. I'll be waiting.
I looked up to see what Simone meant by trouble, and I realized she was right. Descending on me was Captain Stanger, Chief of Police O'Byrne's right-hand man.
Well, 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 if it isn't my favorite columnist.
Sit down, Captain. Kill yourself drinking.
Hey, when did you get back into circulation?
Tonight. I was kidnapped.
Oh, no. And I suppose you were forced to write those columns. You better think up something better than that, Johnny boy. O'Byrne's madder than a hornet. He's issuing a call for you as a material witness. And by the time the boys are through with you, you'll be happy to admit it was you who assassinated Lincoln.
Okay, so you come to take me in. Do I get the handcuffs on me now?
Oh, you got me wrong, Johnny. I'm not taking you anyplace. Officially, I'm off duty. And officially, I don't even know that you're wanted. I just dropped in for a friendly chat.
I don't get it. Why should you bother to tip me off?
I'll tell you, Johnny. I think you're in a spot.
Give me an original thought.
That somebody must have tipped you off to print that stuff. Somebody who knew what they were talking about. After all, they were right about Albert Ferraro's killing, weren't they?
You mean they could be right about Senator Rowland and Police Chief O'Byrne?
No, did I say that? I just figure that if I were you, Johnny, I'd find out and find out fast before you even got a chance of finding out. Before you got bruises where your body used to be. I think it over, Johnny. And you don't have much time. Yeah? Be seeing you, Scribbler.
I watched him go, wondering whether he was crazy or me. Then I pulled myself together and left the club. Destination? Simone's apartment. When her door opened, I thought, she'd changed suddenly. She was wearing a suit and had developed a blue shadow on her chin. Then I realized it was her Adagio partner, Simon.
I come in, Mr. Lane. I've been expecting you. Simone was caught up with some business, so I have taken her place.
You won't mind if I say that it's not quite the same?
Still, perhaps I can persuade you to put up with it. You know, I envy you, Mr. Lane. A columnist of your renown must have a fascinating life.
Yeah, it's all right when you can keep on living. It's the dying that's the tough part.
I do not understand.
I died tonight, professionally.
Oh. You know, surprisingly enough, Mr. Lane, I think I can help you with your problem.
You?
I have some knowledge which should interest you.
Okay, I'm listening.
You know, yours is a wonderful country, Mr. Lane. Everything here is organized on the grand scale. Even crime. The rackets. And there's a new type of racket here today. The racketeer with education, good social background, good standing in the community. Perhaps a company director or even a politician. Is that not so?
Yeah, it's so.
Let us take a hypothetical case. Say, a politician who is also a racketeer. Let us imagine him controlling the vice and the profits of vice in the city. For a time, all goes well. But sooner or later, what you call the heat is on. People get tired of the rackets flourishing under their noses and the noses of the police. They protest. The newspapers take up the protest. Obviously, something must be done.
What?
What would you do in a like situation?
Listen, I may have been taken for a ride the last few days, but I'm not that dumb. I thought of that one. You have yourself elected head of an investigating committee inquiring into vice in the city so that you can cover yourself. And at the same time, crush any opposition that might need crushing.
Exactly so. I congratulate you, Mr. Land. But this opposition you speak of is, of course, part of the politician's own crime organization.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Why should you? It is that part of the organization that is being squeezed too much, bled just a little too much by the politician. They are not organized. And they are alarmed by the politicians' coming activities with the investigation committee. But they lack the means to positive action. And then the politician does something very stupid.
He throws over his girlfriend, Thelma, whom he had confided in too long and too much.
Precisely. And Thelma has some knowledge of events to happen. In particular, she knows that one member of the opposition is still working for our politician.
Let's just call him Roland, huh? I'm getting tired of this hypothetical case.
Very well. So, Thelma knows that Ferraro, who is supposedly one of the opposition, is still working for the senator. He is to give evidence at the first hearing of the investigation committee. He will reveal the activities of all the people in the senator's organization whom the senator wishes to get rid of.
So Roland didn't have Ferraro killed.
On the contrary, the opposition had him killed.
Ah. Just where do you fit into the picture, Simon?
I am a member of the opposition. It was handled cleverly, I think. Ferraro's death served a double purpose. It prevented him giving information, and it served as a warning to the senator.
And then what?
And then we used our master stroke. We needed widespread publicity for our scheme to work. And what could be better than a columnist with a readership of 4 million? You, Mr. Lane, don't you feel flattered?
I feel slightly sick. So I was taken for a ride.
All the way. First you were given several items to publish. Then all that was needed was to move you out of the way, persuade you to write what we wanted you to write, and make sure it was published. At first it seemed as though our plans came unstuck when your friends rescued you. But fortunately they hid you away as well as we could have done ourselves.
What happens now?
Now? It is a sad thing, Mr. Lane. But you will appreciate that the situation cannot remain static. At the moment, the police and Senator Roland are allied against you. Your own newspaper will discredit you. So the public will begin to doubt your allegations. But one thing would convince them that you were telling the truth.
Hmm? What's that?
If you were to be murdered.
What?
Then people would be convinced that you had been right and that you had been murdered to prevent your presenting the proof of your allegations. It is not a bad prospect, is it, Mr. Lane? Once you are dead, you will be a national hero, a martyr. Think of the honor and glory.
I'm thinking of what comes before that.
Oh, don't let it worry you. It will be a quick end. Don't struggle, Mr. Lane. Accept the inevitable. Experience the greatest adventure that life can offer. Death. I as the giver, and you as the receiver.
Brown Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense. based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
Quite a score of odds for a harmless columnist who wanted nothing but to hang out of his popularity with the 4 million readers of his column, Dynamite with Johnny Lane. As if it wasn't enough to be kidnapped and forced to write statements libeling the chief of police and Senator Rowland, head of the Vice Investigation Committee, statements which brought a $2 million damage suit against my paper and just incidentally looked like putting me behind bars. As if that wasn't enough, I had to walk into the apartment of that heavenly hunk of humanity, Simone, the Adagio dancer, only to find her partner, Simon, proposing to make a national hero out of me by murdering me. I sat there, hardly believing my eyes, as he slowly took off his tie.
Just relax, Mr. Lane. It will be all over in a moment. A tie makes such an excellent weapon for a man like me. You have seen our act, mine and Simone's, how I throw her across the stage. It is all in the wrist. And fingers, you know.
No, I didn't know.
And the same thing applies to strangling. It is all in the wrists and fingers.
So you took care of Albert Ferraro?
Of course. Just as I am going to take care of you.
Ah, the situation is well in hand, I see, Simon.
Simone!
Well, my poor little Johnny. It seems that we shall never get around to having a quiet evening to ourselves.
You're part of it, too.
But of course. You are just in time, Simone, for the climax.
Yeah, just in time.
Oh! Well, what do you know? I knocked them cold.
I don't believe it. A rabbit like you.
I don't believe it either, but I like it. Come here, baby.
No.
Yes, baby. I don't know why I never thought of this before.
What are you going to do?
What no gentleman ever does to a lady. For a moment, I just stood there, looking at the pair of them, laid out on the floor like fillets of fish on a slab. I didn't know what had come over me, but whatever it was, I was enjoying it. I employed my newfound personality in a number of phone calls, and half an hour later, the door opened and my ex-bodyguard, Tony Spencer, walked in.
Well, Johnny, so you decided you couldn't get along without me after all.
Well, you could put it that way. Actually, I called your boss, Mr. Roach, because I need someone to look after a couple of people for me.
You mean bump them off?
No, just keep an eye on them.
Where are they?
In the bath.
Both of them?
That's right.
Do you mind if I go and take a look?
Not at all. Help yourself.
Thanks. I don't get this. Jumping catfish.
Recognize them?
It's that Adagio act. Who tied them up and put them in the bath for you?
I did.
You?
Me. I'm a changed man since you last saw me.
You know, I can almost believe it. There is something different about you.
I've decided I'm really the masterful He-Man type. In fact, I've decided that I'm going to call Captain Stanger at police headquarters, get him to come over and take charge of these characters, and then you and I...
Yes, John.
You and I will go out for a little celebration, and I'm not taking no for an answer.
I'm not saying no, Johnny.
Your evening paper, Monsieur.
Oh, thanks, you. Here, Tony, take a look at this. Right in the front page.
But, Johnny, this says that you're going to prove that every allegation you made about Senator Rowland and the chief of police was true.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're going to do it tomorrow at the hearing of the investigation committee.
Uh-huh. I thought I'd have trouble with my editor getting him to run that, but I convinced him that since the paper was being sued for $2 million already, he might as well be hanged for a sheep as a lamb.
Johnny, you're amazing.
I think so, too.
Oh, excuse me, Monsieur Lane. I could not help overhearing.
Yeah? What is it, Joe?
If you really intend to prove your accusations, Monsieur Lane, I think I can help you.
Yeah? How?
We are not immune to racketeers here. We have to pay our tribute to stay in business. But if you have the courage to defy them, I feel I should have the courage to support you. And I have receipts in my office that would interest you immensely.
You have?
If you could spare a few moments and come to my office, I will give them to you.
Well, thanks, Joe. Thanks a lot. You'll excuse me, won't you, Tony?
Well, there is no need why the young lady should not accompany us.
Oh, okay. Come on, honey.
This way, Monsieur Lane. Mademoiselle.
Here we are. Please go in, Monsieur Lane. I have a gun at your back, and I would not like a corpse littering my corridor.
Jewel, what is this?
Inside, Monsieur Lane. You too, mademoiselle.
Hello, Johnny.
Thelma.
That's right. Pleased to see me?
In two words, no.
Thelma, it is true. What it says in his column, he threatens to prove his accusation.
The accusations you made me write, baby.
I wish you'd kept your nose out, Johnny. If Simon hadn't bungled his job, you'd have been dead before you could have written that.
Yeah, but he did bungle his job. And he's now tucked away quietly waiting for the inquiry to start tomorrow when he's going to do a little talking.
But you're going to tell us where to find him.
I don't think I am.
That's one for the books. Johnny Lane, a top guy. You're a lily, Johnny. Well, you'd faint if anyone swatted a fly in front of you.
Would I?
Don't!
Let her go, shoot!
No, you won't!
Nice work, Tony.
Would you like me to break his arm, Johnny?
No!
Not yet, honey. Now then, I'm at the business end of the gun. I'll have a few answers. You, Jules, where do you fit in? You're the leader of the opposition that Simon told me about, huh?
Yes, I handled the distribution angle for Roland for a long time, but it got too good as far as he was concerned. He switched some of it to Lou Prager at the Blue Diamond. My takings were cut by half. Then when Thelma came along and put me in the picture, I thought it was time I did something.
You'll do something, all right. A nice long stretch. As for you, Thelma, you'll fry.
What are you talking about?
The Ferraro killing. The nylon stocking that strangled him was a sure clue that a woman killed him.
That's a lie. I never killed him. It was Simon.
Well, I think he'll say it was you. And his partner, Simone, will back him up. That's 2-1.
But I didn't kill him. I swear it.
Oh, I believe you. I know Simon did it. He likes strangling. But I don't think anyone else will believe you.
Johnny, I'll talk. I'll tell you everything I know about the senator and about O'Byrne, but don't send me up on a murder rap. I'll talk, Johnny. I'll talk.
It was quite a scene in the courtroom next morning. A crowd packed the public benches, and up on the platform sat the investigation committee, headed by Senator Rowland. An opposing figure, gray-haired, substantial, the complete picture of an honest, straightforward American politician. He made his opening speech, a blend of fancy platitudes and phony patriotism. Then he got around to me.
The chief protagonist of the accusations made against the committee, and in particular against the chief of police of Byrne, is here today. And so this committee has decided that in the interests of justice, this matter should be dealt with first of all. I hereby call John Lane to appear before the committee. Are you a lawyer, Mr. Lane? You're entitled to legal advice.
I don't need any, thanks.
Very well. You are John Lane.
Yes.
You're employed as a journalist.
A columnist. That's one step up or down, depending how you feel about it.
Certain statements have appeared in your column, and as a result of them, certain writs have been issued against your newspaper and yourself for damages for libel. Is that correct?
I understand so.
Then, Mr. Lane, you will agree that these statements of yours are either true or false.
Naturally.
If they are false, I'm wasting the committee's time in questioning you.
Presumably.
And if they are true, it's then up to you to prove it.
Quite.
Very good, Mr. Lane. How do you propose to do that?
I'd like to ask some questions, if I may.
To whom do you wish to address your questions?
To the chief of police, to you, Senator, and various other people.
Very well. You may call whom you please, Mr. Lane.
Thank you. I'd like to call Chief of Police Michael O'Byrne. Chief, I'm not too good on formal procedure, so I guess we can take it as read that you're chief of police and your name is Michael O'Byrne.
Very well.
Chief, how much do you earn a year?
Senator, do I have to answer that question?
It's public knowledge, Chief. Anyone can find out by reading the city ordinances. Your salary is $10,000 a year.
Well, if you know, why ask?
And you earn $10,000 a year.
Yes.
No more?
Of course not.
Does your wife work?
No.
Mr. Lynn, we have not unlimited time. I'm afraid I don't see the point of these questions.
You will, Senator. Now, Chief, if your income is $10,000 a year and your wife doesn't work, how is your wife able to deposit $2,000 a month into her bank account?
It's a lie.
Not according to this statement obtained from the manager of a bank by Captain Stanger of the police department. According to this statement, your wife has at the moment a total of some $28,000 in her account, and $2,000 are paid in regularly on the eighth day of every month The deposits are made by a Mr. Smith.
Mr. Lane, there's probably some quite simple explanation of this. I cannot tolerate the chief being put through the hoop just for the sake of satisfying your craving for publicity.
Very well, Senator. I'm prepared to waive any further questioning of the chief of police. Instead, I'd like to call Thelma Radley.
What?
If you look, you'll see her coming in now, together with three people who are here to prove my statements. Will Miss Radley step forward, please?
With pleasure.
Tell me, you wouldn't do this.
Wouldn't I? My name is Thelma Radley, and until 6 weeks ago, I lived in an apartment on Dane Street, which was wholly maintained by Senator Rowland. During the previous 6 months when I was with him, he made me his confidant concerning many of his business affairs. I learned that he controlled the vice rackets of this city. The chief of police was paid $2,000 a month to cooperate with Rowland and leave the rackets alone, and...
This investigation committee is postponed indefinitely. Captain Stanger, you're ordered to arrest the chief of police and with him, Senator Rowland. Charges will be preferred later. And get them out of here, fast, before they get lynched.
Johnny, you were wonderful.
You think so, Tony?
Oh, yes. The way you handle things in that courtroom, why, they ought to make you district attorney.
Hey, that might be a bad idea at that. I don't see why I shouldn't run for DA.
I've got a better proposition.
Yeah? What?
How'd you like to be my bodyguard permanently?
Miss Spencer, is this a proposal of marriage?
Uh-huh. What do you say?
No.
I was afraid of that. I hate to do this, Johnny, but I've made up my mind. Don't worry, honey. By the time you come to, it'll be all over. And you'll like it. That's a promise.
This is Carter Brown. You know, there are some stories that you get a real kick out of writing. Call for a Columnist was one of them. I only hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Next week, I'll be back to present another of my books for you. This one is called Assignment Trouble, and it has an Australian background combining journalism and public relations. The combination was just plain murder. So for now, this is Carter Brown saying, be seeing you, I hope.
Call for a Columnist, you heard Wendy Playfair as Tony, and as Johnny Lane, you heard our star, Joe McCormick. The Carter Brown Mystery Theater, from the best-selling novels by Carter Brown, is dramatized and directed by Maurice Travers for Grace Gibson Radio Productions.